Greetings and salutations, friends, and welcome back to The Arcade. We are your video game podcast here to infotain you for the week of Friday, August 29th of the year 2014. My God, the month of August is now, well, it's basically done now, and that is a very disturbing thing because it means that time just keeps marching on, and it seems like only yesterday we were doing the summer music show, and before that, not long before we did the Weird Al show for Easter, and not long before that was, well, the New Year's music show, and my God, just around the corner is the Halloween music special in just a few weeks, which we are working on, and I say we because there's, well, two of us here on this program. I am Mike the Legend, the man who's so glad to be back with you, and that you can be back here with us to spend some quality time together.
Yes, and this week I am Dennis, the man who is both heartened and angered by the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge.
Those are some extremely opposite emotions you're experiencing.
Yes, unfortunately, that's what this challenge has really brought out of me. Both, on the one hand, I'm heartened. I'm glad that ALS is getting some, you know, much-needed attention. It's a terrible disease, and it may not affect as many people as you might think, but those it does affect, it's terrible. It's like just terrible, just the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Robs people of basically all their faculties but their mind, essentially. And
they become just living shells.
Yeah, prisoners of their own body, essentially. Mm. So on that one hand, I'm glad that some serious money's being raised for ALS. But on the other hand, I'm angered at just really what it seems like it's become on taking up my social media feed, seeing people just doing it, possibly without any sort of actual regard for what ALS is, maybe even not even knowing what they're doing the challenge for at all. Not that they would have any particular, issues with maybe raising some money for ALS. I mean, it's not like I'm expecting people to find out what ALS is and go, no, I'm not donating any money to that. Let those people die. No, no, that's terrible.
It's a horrible sentiment. We do not endorse it.
No, and I don't think anyone actually is doing that. But I feel like just with how wide it's spread that maybe it's at a point now where people are just doing it just because they want to do one, just so they can look as cool as the rest of their friends, no pun intended, on their news feeds.
But, to, you know, to fit in and whatnot. Monkey see, monkey do type effect.
Yeah, that's why it sort of angers me.
I get that, and I think that's fair. That almost seems like an inevitability given just the legs that this thing has had on the internet.
Yes.
It is... Can we still say it's a viral sensation?
Oh, certainly. I mean, this is almost the definition of a viral sensation. The fact that it's crossed over into mainstream media is just a testament to how viral it is, I think.
True enough, I guess, and I'll grant that. When I think of viral sensations, they usually don't last nearly as long as this has. The, what, 2-3 weeks we're now going on of this ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, at least.
The most viral ones don't really last that long. Some viral ones last much longer. I mean, there are certain viral trends that still exist in some capacity that maybe aren't as popular as when they first came out, but still exist. Like, and that's the other reason why this sort of gets to me, is because I look at this and I think maybe people are just viewing this as another one of those viral trends. You remember things like owling, coning, planking?
Ugh. Planking.
Coning was pretty silly, too. That whole trend of, like, people driving through McDonald's drive-thrus or whatever drive-thrus, places that sell ice cream cones,
mm-hmm.
And when the person at the window hands them the ice cream cone, they essentially just pull the top off and drive away. Or pull the top off, wait for a reaction out of the person who's handing them the cone, and then just drive away. To which, you know, I always thought it was funny that One of my younger siblings, who was working at McDonald's at the time, was saying that someone actually tried doing that to her, but she knew all about it, being up with the memes and such. Someone tried doing it to her, she just kind of looked at them, and was just like, yeah. that's not funny. And then the person just kind of like looked and was like, uh-oh, I don't know what to do now. I was supposed to get a rise out of this person and they're not having any sort of reaction. Uh-oh, abort, abort, I have ice cream all over my hand. No! But not that, you know, not that this ice bucket challenge is without its share of fails as well.
I mean, certainly not.
I'm sure you've all seen some of those videos of people not doing such a great job of this challenge or whatnot.
In one fashion or another, perhaps the method they use to, or the ice in particular they use to dump over themselves hasn't quite melted enough yet. It is still very solid and perhaps even in giant chunk form. And they, well, injure themselves accordingly.
Yes, or the ice is too cold and they just kind of run out and get clotheslined, literally.
Cranked in the face, yes. Or one in particular I've seen was of a woman doing it on horseback, and of course, once the cold water reaches the horse's back, the horse is going to freak out and wonder, where the hell did this ice water come from? This is cold, and the horse takes off running.
Yes.
The woman was on the horse bareback, meaning there's no saddle, no blanket on the horse. She is contacting the horse directly. There's no seat in between.
Yes, no stirrups to put her feet in to essentially...
No reins either.
No way to hold onto the horse whatsoever.
No.
So
no.
She just flies off.
Well, the horse takes off running, and then she can't quite maintain her balance on the horse, and then face plants onto the ground, which is the right thing to happen in that circumstance.
Yes.
You deserved it.
Yes, you did.
Now, I have found in my readings and in followings of the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, yes, it is a great thing to give more attention to the cause, and also has been tremendously lucrative and for the charity and the monies raised by the organizations that work towards finding a cure for ALS in whatever country you're in. I think the percentage increase in monies donated from this time or this month compared to months in previous years has been, or the same month in previous years, has been hundredfold increases, if not more.
I could see that.
Everywhere, so it's there are positive benefits to that. And I do have to say, one aspect I found that maybe helps continue on the legs of this thing and encourage people to do it is the simple act of it playing into people's vanity.
Yes. Well, that also sort of goes back to what I was saying. Oh, all my friends are doing this, and I want to as well. I want to look just as cool as my friends,
mm-hmm.
So I want my own video. I think it's really like, you know...
Hey, look at... And also, too, it has the element of, hey, look at me, I'm doing something good for charity.
Yeah.
So the aspect of... Or the vain aspect of it is maybe muted a little bit. And then replaced with, you know, the charitable component. But there's still vanity to it. It's,
yep.
Hey, look at me, look what I'm doing. Hooray!
And then, of course, you know, there's always that nagging voice in the back of my mind when I watch these videos and going, did they actually donate?
That's a good question.
I mean, I'm not really casting that much blame. I mean, I didn't get challenged. I didn't really donate yet. I do plan on it because I've been a fan of Jason Becker for years, this guitar player who's unfortunately been living with ALS for the past 25 years or so, which people look at him and go, wow, he's actually kind of an anomaly because he's otherwise, other than his ALS, he's pretty healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually did an ice bucket challenge as well in his own special way. And that one is kind of worth watching because someone with ALS spreading awareness about ALS during the height of ALS awareness on the internet, basically, it's kind of nice. But yeah, like there's always that thing in the back of my mind. It's like, wow, this person did this challenge, and like they say the whole spiel at the start of the video. Are they actually going to donate? Or are they just doing this just to have another one of these videos on the internet?
Do some of these people even understand that there's a donation aspect to the challenge?
Yes. That's the other issue. It's like, are they just doing it because they see it? It's like, oh, I'm doing the ice bucket challenge. Someone's going to dump ice on me, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to challenge some other people. It's like, yeah, but you missed the whole key part of it.
There's a component of donating monies to the cause, to the charities. My understanding of it, having not been challenged directly, so therefore I haven't well, needed to read into it, ultimately, is that if you're challenged by someone and you take up the aspect of dumping water on yourself, you then are to donate, or are expected to donate, $10 to the charity. Or if you refuse to dump the ice bucket of water on your head, you then are to donate $100 to the charity. So the dumping of ice water saves you $90. That's my understanding of things.
Yes, but really, that just kind of, in a way, dumping ice in your head makes you kind of look more like a jerk than if that's the case, doesn't it? This is, I'm too cheap to donate more, so I'm just going to dump some ice on my head and get out of it.
Yeah, there's that. There's definitely that. That's for the people who understand the monetary donation aspect of this, and I also can't help but wonder when I look at these things, because this has been such a sensation, an absolute sensation, that's taken off and hit celebrities, politicians, Joe Schlub, John and Jane Q Public, in whoever's respective news feeds and social media accounts, that what is the next charity going to have to do? Because all charities now are looking at this and wondering, how can they have this for themselves? What are they going to have to do recapture this magic?
There's either that, or, well, there's a couple things that could happen, I think. Either, some charity, who knows what the next charity will be to try to do something viral. They'll do something similar, but not quite, like maybe, I don't know, something similar to the Ice Bucket Challenge. Use your imagination. I don't want to do that right now. or the Ice Bucket Challenge will suddenly just become a thing that you do for charity in general. That's my thought. That maybe like doing an Ice Bucket Challenge for blah will just become a thing that people will start doing. And maybe if there's a pledge drive going on for MS or breast cancer or whatever else, they'll start going, oh, do an ice bucket challenge for breast cancer, or do an ice bucket challenge for MS.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing I could see happening, maybe. Or maybe not. I don't know. I don't know how things will go viral. I think it's a very impossible thing to predict. It's pretty much not really a science, it seems.
Certainly not, and there's a lot of just guessing to it as well. And I'm also wondering, along that same note of wondering what the next charity is going to have to do to try and recapture this magic, or at least attempt to recapture this magic that the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge has enjoyed, is has this ALS Ice Bucket Challenge perhaps salted the earth, so to speak, and so the next charity, whatever it is, whoever it is, when they attempt something like this, will they be viewed negatively for it because they are, well, trying to recapture the magic and ultimately copy the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge or do something similar enough that it's regarded as copying?
Yeah, that can certainly be something that happens as well. I mean, people will just come off this high of the Ice Bucket Challenge, then see some other worthy charity try to do something, and then people just scoff at it going, oh, you're just ripping off ALS.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's not the point, though. It's not about whatever you're talking about. Like, it's about the cause getting money. That's all the ALS one was about. Come on. Like, really?
I don't know how it's going to turn out, but I hope that, some charities are smart enough to let some time breathe, after this thing runs its course, so they don't try to, cash in or bring up their cause or their attempt for a viral sensation right at the tail end of this. Because that would just be the worst. To try and extend the legs of something similar when this is already dying out and people get tired of it. Because at some point we're going to hit peak ALS yes, Ice Bucket Challenge.
Exactly. peak viral charitable marketing.
Yes. Until that happens, go ahead, keep on.
I'm not going to challenge anyone to the Ice Bucket Challenge because I don't want to be challenged, but what I want to do is still say that you should donate to ALS. It's a worthy cause, and you can find a link to the ALS, and some ALS sites on our website, thearcadeshow.com. We'll point you in some sort of direction there.
And also to the Jason Becker Foundation or donation cause as well.
Yes.
To support a guitar virtuoso who was silenced by this disease.
Yes. Well, unable to play a guitar anymore. Maybe not silenced as such. I mean, he can't speak, but he's got a communication method, and
his talents were silenced.
Yes, sort of. He still writes music. He just can't play guitar.
For God's sakes!
You're impossible. He's a very inspiring person. Watch his movie, Not Dead Yet. It's a movie about him. About just good God. It's, fine, I'll link to that on the website as well.
Okay.
Arcadeshow.com.
All right. So that's a lot we're going to have, you know, linked to on our website. But, of course, we still have plenty of show to get to now that we've spoken extensively on our take on the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. We're now going to talk about, hopefully, a development in the world of science that may one day pave the way for a future where... things like ALS are no longer a cause, and also things like, well, organ donation are no longer needed, no longer require awareness or whatnot. We've spoken earlier this year in previous Science Goes Crazy stories about regenerative medicine and stem cells and whatnot, and we have another story in that vein. It's our ludicrous leadoff for this week. It is brought to us by researchers in Scotland who have been able to, brass tacks, grow a whole organ in a mouse. Just use a, not like a normal mouse organ, but regenerate an organ that doesn't normally grow in a mouse inside a mouse. Like, use the mouse as an incubator for this organ.
Yes, scientists at the Medical Research Council Center for Regenerative Medicine at the University of Edinburgh started with cells from a mouse embryo, and then they published some findings in the journal Nature Cell Biology, which, as we said, could potentially pave the way for just eliminating the need to really, like, donate organs.
Indeed. Now, these cells, cells that were taken from a mouse embryo were genetically, quote-unquote, reprogrammed, tinkered with, had people play God, who knows, you know, call it whatever you so will. But they were reprogrammed and started to transform into a type of cell found in the thymus. These were mixed with other support role cells and placed inside mice. Once inside, the bunch of cells developed into a functional thymus. It is similar to a feat that was performed last year when lab-grown human brains reached the same level of development as a 9-week-old fetus, which we spoke of on the show, the little organoids.
Yes, not full brains, I hope.
No. They lacked, you know, the ability to gain sentience. They could have the very basic of functions, but they were there. And if you're wondering what a thymus is, if it doesn't come up in your daily conversations about, you know, just life, the weather, politics, the thymus, which I'm sure it should, and if not, it now will.
Yes, the thymus apparently is a specialized, according to Wikipedia, which I have open currently, and I'm reading off of it directly, because I'm not a scientist or a person who knows things about these sorts of things.
Biologist. But you're not even a scientician.
No, not a scientician. Though I will tell you that the thymus is a specialized organ of the immune system, and within the thymus, T cells mature. So, in case you were ever wondering where T cells mature, it's in the thymus.
Indeed.
So,
and the thymus that they grew and implanted into mice contained two regions, the cortex and the medulla, and it was also able to produce these all-important T cells, which, you know, we need and most living organisms have to fight off things that want to do your body harm.
Yes.
And for the most part, are successful.
Yes, unless you have things like cancer and whatnot, then maybe indeed, they're not so successful.
HIV, I'm sure most of us have seen that... you know,
that crappy video.
Educational video in school, grade 5, grade 6, about the house and the red crab people who want to, you know, come in, but the fence keeps them out, but then the fence is broken.
Yes.
And so they're
able to... That might have been a Canadian thing, but... And I was in the same class as you then, so I did see the same video. Yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Others may not, and no, we can't link you to it, because I have no idea what it was called.
I don't even know what search would be needed for that, just as an aside. But Professor Claire Blackburn, who was part of the research team, said it was, quote, tremendously exciting when the team realized what they had achieved. As she told the BBC, quote, this was a complete surprise to us that we were really being able to generate a fully functional and fully organized organ, starting with reprogrammed cells in a very straightforward way. This is a very exciting advance, and it's also very tantalizing in terms of the wider field of regenerative medicine. So, stem cells, they're at it again.
Yes, good old stem cells. Is there anything they can't do?
I think we're learning increasingly, no, there isn't. Other than clean your room, but you know, that's years down the way. We have to figure out how to grow new organs.
Yes, exactly.
That, you know,
maybe make an entire clone of yourself to do the room cleaning for you.
Ooh,
just
perfect.
Made entirely out of stem cells.
Perfect.
Starting with a fully functional thymus.
Well,
that's clearly where you start. That's what they've, what we've learned from this previous article from the BBC.
Indeed. Hey, what good's a clone if they're getting sick all the time? They're going to need T cells.
That's true.
How can they, you know, clean your room if they're taking sick days or whatnot? That's
or just
a, that's
continually
a bad
dying.
Exactly. Why go through all that fuss and muss?
Oh, man. So, but speaking of fuss and muss, our next story. Well, you could say that Amazon must have went through a bunch of fuss and muss to be able to pull off what they did.
Indeed. And this takes us nicely into our news of the week, as I think there's one. Not just big story, one gigantic story of the week that
yes.
Bears
could have
discussion.
Could have been a ludicrous lead-off if we didn't have that whole growing organs from nothing story that we just finished talking about. But in case you weren't aware, Twitch, you know, Twitch TV, the that popular game streaming service that many people use and has brought us such viral sensations such as Twitch plays Pokemon.
Indeed, that's...
And Fish plays Pokemon, unfortunately.
And more recently?
And more recently, Fish plays Street Fighter, or two fish fight each other at Street Fighter. It's so stupid. Anyways, but that Twitch is it's a good platform. It's streaming and all that good jazz, but Twitch was recently acquired by Amazon.
Oh.
For just shy of $1 billion.
The exact total is $970 million.
Yes. Now, it might sound ridiculous of me to say that $30 million is just shy of something.
$30 million is nothing to sneeze at.
No, that's, under normal circumstances, no. But when you're that close to $1 billion, yeah, it's just shy of $1 billion.
You feel comfortable just rounding up and saying, yeah, it's a billion.
Yeah, pretty much.
At that point, $30 million is chump change.
Yes, compared to the other $970 million that they spent. So, yeah, according to Wall Street Journal, Amazon agreed to a deal that will see it acquire Twitch for, as we said, $970 million. Which follows an early report from The Information, which stated that the deal could be announced soon. As it turns out, they were correct.
Indeed. They've got some good sources there at the Wall Street Journal. Now, this is very intriguing that Amazon was the big company to gobble up the small fish that was Twitch for this very large sum of money, because we had spoke earlier in this year, because all reports indicated, Google was going to be the company to eat up Twitch.
Yes, but...
And by eat up, of course, I mean acquire, but, you know, I always have the vision in my head of a very large fish eating a very small fish.
Yes.
In terms of these transactions.
Yes. It's never a merger. It's always just someone getting what they want.
Yeah, it's always just hum.
But,
the sound effect's totally necessary, by the way.
As was kind of bandied about around in various circles. People were talking. I'm sure Google probably saw this, and maybe this is why they kind of didn't buy Twitch. But, you know, the word antitrust kind of got thrown around an awful lot. You know, Google owning YouTube, the biggest video source on the internet, essentially. Mm-hmm. If they bought Twitch, would that sort of be monopolizing on internet video?
There's a very good chance it would be, or some areas of the business community, legal community, or whatnot, or even the federal government might try and make that argument. And perhaps Google, it's believed, just decided to not even go down that road if there's the potential for that fight to occur. Now, Google, it was reported earlier this year, was planning to buy Twitch for an even $1 billion. But instead, I guess the talks between Twitch and Google themselves cooled off.
Yep.
And that allowed Amazon to step in. Now, Twitch got a bit of a haircut from what their original Google deal was. I mean, $30 million, that's...
Yeah, as we said, that literally is nothing to sneeze at. Unless you're already talking about $1 billion, then it is apparently something to sneeze at.
Yes, you can, you know, just light your fireplace in the winter with $30 million.
Yes, all I have to say is, if you're going to sneeze $30 million, sneeze my way, please.
Sneeze on me.
Yes, please.
Let it rain. Now, in a message addressed to the Twitch community upon announcing this acquisition, this gobbling up, to the Twitch community, CEO Emmett Shear wrote, quote, "We chose Amazon because they believe in our community, they share our values and long-term vision, and they want to help us get there faster. We're keeping most everything the same, our office, our employees, our brand, and most importantly, our independence. But with Amazon's support, we'll have the resources to bring you an even better Twitch. I personally want to thank you, each and every member of the Twitch community, for what you've created. Thank you for putting your faith in us. Thank you for sticking with us through growing pains and stumbles. Thank you for bringing your very best to us and sharing it with the world. Like Twitch plays Super Street Fighter 2. Or sorry, Fish plays Super Street Fighter 2. Yes, that's the best. He goes on to say, quote, "Thank you from a group of gamers who never dreamed they'd get to help shape the face of the industry that we love so much. It's dangerous to go alone. On behalf of myself and everyone else at Twitch, thank you for coming with us."
He may have started off as a gamer, but he ended up as a soulless marketing executive. It's dangerous to go alone. At least he threw that in there to try to gain some cred back, but honestly...
Once you're involved in deals like this, your normal street cred just is gone. Yeah, you're on a whole other level.
You've touched a deal that's close to $1 billion. That's not... You're not a normal gamer anymore, pal.
It's like staring into the face of God. You can't just go back and walk around daily life again.
No. Now, is it wrong that when you know... Reading through his whole statement there, saying that, oh, we're getting to keep our independence and blah, blah, blah. Is it wrong that the first thing I thought is, how long before he gets fired and someone else brought in?
No, he'll get reorganized.
Yes. How long before Twitch gets either reorganized or amalgamated into the greater Amazon set of services that they provide?
Oh, I'm sure. That's going to happen at some point. I'm sure they'll move the offices, if not they're already in Seattle, then somewhere closer to Seattle, or, you know, closer to Amazon HQ. Maybe they won't be wearing Twitch golf shirts to the office anymore. They're wearing Amazon golf shirts anymore.
Or Twitch by Amazon.
Ooh.
It's just... Or Amazon Twitch. You know, because Amazon has their whole set of web services. Maybe you didn't know. Amazon has a whole set of web services that they offer. They're not just a online store for books and whatever. They actually offer web hosting and a whole bunch of crazy services. Twitch will probably just become another one of those.
Who knows? And who knows how this is going to fit into other devices that Amazon has on the go, such as the Fire Phone and Fire TV and the Fire tablets.
Every time I hear the name Fire Phone, it just...
You picture a phone on fire.
I picture a phone on fire, like an old-timey, like, rotary phone with a cord and everything, just on fire, and some woman crying as she's talking into it. It's like a 1950s housewife, just... I don't know why. It's just, that's the Fire Phone. Or his phone in the fire hall, and there's a Dalmatian just like laying down there, and you know, a fireman just runs out wearing nothing but a towel, going, oh! And then he just missed. It's like, oh, we got to get an answering machine here at the fire hall. That's another building that might be on fire. It's like, why don't you just... Wasn't there an alarm or something? Like, this is fire phone. Jesus. Anyways.
So there's that going on. Or how this plays into Amazon's larger plans to get into the gaming universe remains to be seen. Do remember that they recently, as of a couple months ago, did acquire Double Helix Games, who were the developers of the new Killer Instinct game,
That's true.
One on the Xbox platform.
That is true.
They've also been steadily acquiring various different video game industry developers, designers who have worked on such games as Portal and also Far Cry. So they are steadily amassing talent. And what this is all going to lead to remains unseen at this point.
That is true. I mean, it's really hard to see what they're doing other than maybe some higher up at Amazon always wanted to just be in game development and is just thinking, oh, if I buy all these companies, people will think I'm cool. Or, oh, this is just one step forward towards me finally getting to make that game I always wanted to make. And then
it's a new version of Root Beer Tapper.
Or it's just some crappy, like, some crappy Japanese style RPG that just is just a horrible ripoff of Final Fantasy and just doesn't go anywhere and gets released unfinished.
What exactly this all is going to lead to, we do not know, and I'm sure there's even some people in Amazon who do not know. I'm sure Jeff Bezos knows, but he's not saying.
No,
If you're Jeff Bezos and want to tell us, email us info@thearcadeshow.com. Or if you are just someone who works with Jeff Bezos, or is in his office, or you bring him lunch, or you want to offer your own theories and let us know what you think Amazon is up to with these various game-related goblings up.
Consumptions.
Consumptions,
as I think it might be.
Yes. Again, email us info@thearcadeshow.com.
If you haven't signed a non-disclosure agreement.
Ah, touche.
If you have signed a non-disclosure agreement, you could very well provide us with really bad information, and we'll be none the wiser. So all the more reason for you to email us, info@thearcadeshow.com.
Or you can also just email us anonymously. We'll never tell.
Where's the fun in that?
I
don't want to receive email from someone who doesn't like to live dangerously. There, I said it.
All right. So if you like to live dangerously, then you are allowed to email us.
Oh, fine. Even if you want to email us anonymously, that's fine. Go ahead and send us an email. Anonymously. Coward. I mean, you can't take that personally. You haven't even sent the email yet. And remember, it takes guts to send an email.
So demonstrate your guts by emailing us, info@thearcadeshow.com.
Jeff Bezos.
There, we've said it. Challenge laid out.
Yes. Will the challenge be accepted? I doubt it. But there's always that little glimmer of hope that exists that hasn't quite been snuffed out by life in general yet.
Indeed. Now, if he eventually accepts our challenge or whatnot, perhaps we can, or he doesn't like the fact that we're antagonizing him, you know, trying to poke him with a stick, perhaps we can one day solve it with a rousing game of, a Pokemon fighting game.
Yes.
Because that's the other big story of this week.
That's the other big, but awfully strange story that came out. I mean, we all know that Nintendo has Smash Brothers, that sometimes Pokemon appear in Smash Brothers, you know, Pikachu, Jigglypuff.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Mewtwo's been in it as well.
Indeed. A number of other ones have just appeared as supplemental characters that have effects on the fight to the other main combatants.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't think any of us would have really anticipated a Pokemon fighting game coming out. I mean, on one level, though, Pokemon is sort of already a fighting game, though it's a strategy fighting game, and a whole other kettle of fish, and there was Pokemon Battle Arena that was Pokemon fighting each other, but it wasn't a fighting game.
Certainly not.
Like a Street Fighter, Tekken, you know, that kind of thing.
It's always maintained its strategic RPG elements to the battles, and you're dealing with multiple combatants at a time as opposed to the more traditional one-on-one or at most two-on-two teams. Yes.
With the exception of Pokemon Snap, which was definitely not an RPG at all. And
no one's quite sure what that was.
It was a wasted afternoon that I probably took back to the video store when it came out. I don't know what compelled me to rent it, but I thought, Pokemon Snap, what?
This is too bizarre not to try.
Yes, and I tried it and beat it in one afternoon and felt horrendously ripped off. But this is not Pokemon Snap we're talking about.
This is not Pokemon Snap. We are talking about Pokken Tournament. Yes, not Pokemon Tournament, Pokken Tournament.
And why is it called Pokken? It almost sounds like Pokemon, the word, is being mixed with some other word that ends with K-K-E-N.
Like, you'd see it to look at it written out and you think, like, that looks like Tekken. Did someone misspell Tekken horribly? Well, no, there's a reason it's called Pokken, is because it's being developed by Bandai Namco.
Yes, who, if you weren't aware, are responsible for Tekken. So yes, it looks like Pokemon mashed up with Tekken in name and in gameplay.
Indeed, there was a very brief trailer released with this announcement. Only about a minute or two long. You can find the link to it on our website, thearcadeshow.com. And it shows Lucario, one of the newer generation Pokemon, fighting Machamp from the first generation of Pokemon games.
Yes, the only Pokemon in the video that I recognized but had to look up its name because it's been a while since I played a Pokemon game, and the Pokemon game I played was from the first generation of Pokemon games, so forgive me for not remembering all the different Pokemon names.
Okay, old man.
I was going to say there's like 150 of them, but then I stopped myself and went, no, there's way more than them now. There was 150 when I haven't played. When I played.
When you were young.
When I was young.
And now now all the kids with all their Pokemon, it's hard to keep track of them all.
Now there's what, 700 something of them?
I've lost count.
There's some.
Once it got to be 151, that was enough for me.
Yeah, too many Pokemon now.
152? Sorry, I can't handle it. So it was announced this week, and the producer of this game, and also veteran Tekken producer, Katsuhiro Harada, said of the game, quote, "Whether you are a casual player, a regular player, or a hardcore player, anyone who likes Pokemon can have fun." He said when discussing or talking about the event, the announcement, with in a quote that was translated by Kotaku. Now, this game, you're probably wondering, sweet, is this going to be like a first, you know, or technically third-party game that's going to boost the Wii U sales and whatnot? No! Here's the crazier thing. It's right now slated only for release in Japanese arcades in 2015. No word yet at all on a console release.
What would be even more strange is if it gets released for multi-platform. Like, if you could end up playing Pokken Tournament on a PlayStation or a Xbox or PC. I think that would be strange.
That seems like it would be a stretch, because I'm sure Nintendo has some kind of ownership stake in the Pokemon company.
Oh, I'm sure of it.
Like, I'm sure they exist only a second party. You know, they're separate from Nintendo, but not completely independent.
Yeah.
So there's that, and they can go off and do these unique things, but we don't have full details on if it's going to be one-on-one, two-on-two, three-on-three, or whatnot, but It looks like it's just straight up fighting. Like cartoon fighting, as you would imagine. Your yes. Pokemon actually doing battle.
Yes, in real time. None of that selecting attacks and using strategy nonsense. Well, I say that. People who play fighting games would yell at me because there is strategy involved. It's been explained to me. It's like micro-strategy and super fast, but it's still strategy. And I don't have the reflexes for that kind of strategy, so to me, my strategy is always mashing buttons, but that's just me not being very good at fighting games other than Mortal Kombat 3. As Mike the Legend gives me an icy death stare.
Indeed. I wonder why that would be. Or another approach is just to simply, you know, learn and get down pat a move or two for a couple characters, or just one character. That keeps your enemies at distance. The whole time. By using the gun. Or the grenades. For Striker.
Or Liu Kang. Or Shang Tsung.
Yep, just all those range attacks. Oh, I'm gonna do this. No, okay. Well, I'm just... No. Well, how, what if I do this? No. The most insulting one is Striker.
Yeah, because he's such a crappy character. He's just some regular guy with guns and stuff. It's like, whoa, brrp, brrp. And his, like, roundhouse kick looks like he's just super out of shape and can't do it. Anyways... A mild side note to this story, if you are planning on Googling for images of Pokken Tournament, make sure you spell out Pokken and Tournament. Don't just look for the word Pokken.
Why is that?
Because that is the Dutch word for smallpox.
Oh!
And you don't want to see pictures of smallpox.
No, you don't. It is not pleasant, I think is one way to put it. So there's that. But Pokken Tournament is apparently a thing that's going to exist in the world next year in Japan, in Japanese arcades. Imagine that. Now, I wonder if this is going to have the traditional fighting game, like, arcade console control layout. Joystick, 6 to 8 buttons?
Probably, if it's anything like Tekken.
Will it have standard attacks like, you know, high punch, low punch, block, high kick, low kick? Or will it be... buttons for different just special attacks, like, you know, weak attack, strong attack, and you're, instead of, say, Pikachu punching, it's Pikachu doing, you know, Thunderbolt and Thundershock or whatnot.
I could see those being
tackle.
Combo. I could see those being combo attacks. Like, you'd have to do them like you would do, like, special moves in, like, Street Fighter or whatnot. You know, like quarter circle forward kind of thing.
I'm intrigued by this, and, hopefully it'll see a release at the very least in North American arcades. Now, of course, there would always be some kind of time delay, but it's not impossible. I have seen in my own travels different other Nintendo arcade games eventually come here. There, I've seen Mario Kart arcade games. Never seen F-Zero ones.
No.
Just the Mario Kart ones. And that's fine, but hopefully this will make its way over here. And then, of course, becomes the challenge of finding an arcade. Because those are...
Those are kind of hard to come by.
They're about
these
as
days.
Popular as video rental shops.
Yes. And for the same reason as they're, as why video rental shops are so as popular as they currently are. Unfortunately.
Indeed.
The world we live in now.
One of the contributing factors is the, well, ability for people just to stay at home, play great looking games on their system, and also just download new content all willy-nilly. to the games that they enjoy, and we had an announcement this week of DLC, actual brand new, authentic, non-branded, non-corporate, synergized...
Non-horrendous-looking Mercedes crap for Mario Kart 8.
Indeed. I like what you said in those words in that sequence. Yes, there was an official announcement this week of new Mario Kart 8 DLC. It was slated for a release in 2 packs, the first one coming in November 2014, the second one coming in May 2015, and by the sounds of it, this is rather substantial and rather beefy downloadable packs.
Yes, and they look awesome.
Rather girthy, if you will.
Yes, the each add-on content pack will contain two new cups, each with 4 courses, which in total increases the number of available courses by 50%. The add-on content packs will also include various classics like Wario's Gold Mine for Mario Kart Wii, as well as some other new courses, and some taking place inside Hyrule from, you know, The Legend of Zelda, others taking place in wherever Animal Crossing takes place. And some other new vehicles that has, well, one has me excited, because I'm a fan of the series, the Blue Falcon cart from F-Zero.
Indeed.
Which is in the first
add-on content pack. And you mentioned Hyrule and Animal Crossing, and that's kind of one of the important points of these girthy DLC packs, is that they're adding new characters, one of which is Link, and the other one is the villager from Animal Crossing.
Yes. So in the first pack has one, the second pack has the other. But alongside with Link in the first pack, we're also getting Tanuki Mario and Cat Peach.
Cat Peach from the most recent Super Mario World game on Super Mario 3D World on the Nintendo Wii U.
Which, and of course, Tanuki Mario from Super Mario 3, in case you weren't aware or have never played Super Mario 3.
Tanuki Mario, perfect. And the second pack, the new characters in the second pack, that is coming in spring of 2015, May 2015, the new characters there, as I said, the villager of Animal Crossing fame, Isabelle, and also Dry Bowser. If you're wondering who Dry Bowser is, he's Bowser, but a giant dry skeleton form. He's basically the, you know, dry Koopas that you see in, well,
like dry bones.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, those. But Bowser.
That's kind of terrifying. All right, so... And yes, as we said, each pack includes three characters, four vehicles, and eight courses. So that's 16 more courses, eight more vehicles, and six more characters.
That's...
In case you didn't want to do the math inside your head.
That's rather substantial.
Yes.
So there's also a bonus you get if you purchase both packs, either together or separately. You'll get eight different colored Yoshis and eight different colored shy guys that can be used straight away. So neat. Okay, not as neat as having Link driving around in the world of Mario Kart, but okay.
In the F-Zero car.
Ooh.
Or one of the F-Zero cars, I should say.
Link in the Blue Falcon. From F-Zero in a Mario Kart game.
Yes.
Trying to just destroy the universe. But with all this cross-pollination is Nintendo. If you're wondering what these packs are going to cost, there are some details about that as well from Nintendo. The first one due in November of this year, and the second one coming May of next year, they will each cost $8, or you buy the season pass and get both of them for $12. So $12, if you think about it, $12 to get you six new characters, eight new vehicles, 16 new courses. That seems like a worthwhile endeavor.
Yes, especially since there are 32 courses in the game initially, in the vanilla game, as it were.
Indeed.
So you get an extra 50% worth of courses. Again, in case you didn't want to do that math yourself. So that's not a bad deal, I don't think.
That is totally worth it. And is this perhaps symbolizing the start of Nintendo's earnest attempt to cross-pollinate all their first-party games with other characters from other games to add some level of intrigue and awesome and perhaps get the Nintendo fan base excited?
Just make the Nintendo universe an actual thing?
Indeed.
Like, just expand out all these separate worlds into just one... massive universe. I think that might be an interesting plan if they're going in that route. I don't know if they're going in that route, but that'd be cool if they did.
Well, I guess maybe they're not directly taking that route by, you know, including these characters as DLC. If they included them in the game right proper and incorporated them into whatever storylines or whatnot, yes, then maybe they're going down that path in earnest. But it occurs to me as well that in the fall is also when those Amiibo toys are slated for release. The Amiibo toys being the, you know, collectible, interactive, well, toys that also...
Nintendo's version of Skylanders, basically.
Nintendo Skylanders, thank you. And those, Nintendo said at the time, will have, you can use not just in Super Smash Bros., but also in other games like Mario Kart 8.
Yes.
And a few other games, but this makes a lot of sense if you, say, maybe... have Link in your Super Smash Bros. Game, Link in your Mario Kart 8 game, and also, hey, there's probably going to be a Link toy for sale as well in the first wave of Amiibo figures.
That's true.
Interesting. So you can get maximum usage out of those some of those characters to start with.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. Perhaps cohesive vision and plan by Nintendo.
It's about time.
I echo your sentiments.
So, yes, Unlike Microsoft, who doesn't seem to... Well, I'm just going to go out and say it, that it doesn't appear just on the outside that they've had a very cohesive plan with the Xbox One. when it first came out. I mean, it's been basically plagued with fragmented, contradictory messaging on almost every front, it seems, over the past year and a bit.
Especially at the start, it seems to have, I guess, more recently settled and, I guess, a more...
Well, more recently settled, but going back on a lot of different things that they'd set out to make a concerted effort to do. Like, really trying to push the Kinect was one that they were really, really trying to do initially. And then, I guess, as soon as, you know, new head guy gets power at Microsoft, new head guy makes no bones about the fact he's like, I'm a game developer, I'm in it for the games, I don't care about anything that's not games, let's just cut this stupid Kinect thing out, it's not... Gamers clearly don't want it, what are we trying to force it down their throats for? People went, okay, yeah, that makes sense. But now they're kind of going to try to not completely shoot themselves in the foot with this Kinect thing and release a standalone Kinect package?
Indeed. Well, it was announced earlier this year by Phil Spencer that the Kinect camera would no longer be packaged in with the Xbox One, and you could get just the console, well, bundle, say console itself, standalone console, that's the word I'm looking for, but unfortunately my mind was dancing around it entirely, doing the hokey pokey. So you could get just the Xbox One itself, no Kinect One, for a cheaper price, or you pay, you know, a little bit extra, pay $100 extra, and then get the Kinect camera as well. He said at the time that it was going to just increase demand for the camera itself, which of course we scoffed at, but nevertheless, it's been now announced when you can buy just the camera itself in a standalone bundle separate from your Xbox console. Starting on October 7th is when you'll be able to get the Xbox One Kinect standalone camera. It's going to come in two versions. One will include a game, a digital copy of Dance Central Spotlight.
Hooray!
And one that does not.
Hooray!
The game itself launches, Dance Central Spotlight launches in September for $10, and the Xbox, or standalone Kinect camera for Xbox One will be available at retailers across the country. So the bundle will cost $150. So that's for the game and the camera.
So it's not the $100 he said it was going to be. It is now the $140, technically, if the game is $10.
Yes.
Again, math.
Using math, yes, I see what you're doing there. Using some mathemagics. Making numbers appear into other numbers, I see.
Drinking some mathahol.
Ooh, mathahol. Smoking some mathals.
I thought you were just going to say smoking some math. I was going to say, no, that might be a little bit too close to meth and...
Inappropriate, indeed. So if you're really gung-ho to get yourself the Kinect camera, then, again, the standalone bundle of it, separate from the Xbox One console, October 7th, $150 gets you that, and a game, the game only costing $10. And the difference between pricing bundles when it comes in the Kinect, or it comes in the Xbox One package, and without the Xbox One package, is $100. So... Let's review this for a minute. The Xbox One bundle with the Kinect is $500. Without it is $400.
Yeah.
Therefore, you'd think, okay, the Kinect is valued at $100. This bundle is $150 minus $10 for the game that you probably don't care about unless you have small siblings or just really want to practice your moves.
Or children.
Yes. Or that. But if you don't and you don't care about the game, whatever, get it without the game. $140.
Yeah.
Where's that extra $40 premium coming in for?
It makes sense to me. I mean, if you want to get the Xbox with the Kinect, you buy the Kinect bundle. Otherwise, if you change your mind, well, it's a punishment for basically not getting it all at the same time. It makes perfect sense.
Ah, so
it's the piecemeal way. I mean, it's the a la carte. They do it at restaurants.
True enough.
It's basic marketing.
And, yes, acting as the decoy, like, oh, this is so much more expensive, but we have the savings here, so, well, let's just get it all together then.
Yeah.
As opposed to forcing it on people and making it seem as though that, you know, they have no choice. giving them the A choice, but also trying to guide them as best as possible. Yes.
Or someone like me, I don't actually care at all about the Kinect, and I don't think I would ever care about the Kinect, and I mean, like, I haven't really seen any games that are Kinect-only that would really warrant me ever wanting a Kinect. And I'm fine with just buying the lower model, knowing that, okay, well, I don't care if it's like I'm saving $100, or additionally, I'm also saving $140 or $150, because I know for a fact I don't care about any of that stuff. It's like, if some other thing comes out, well, egg on my face, I guess I'll buy the Kinect, but that's if that other thing comes out. That's fine. I mean, either way, yeah.
But all right, fair enough.
Microsoft did actually, they released a trend that they're trying to say is supposed to be surprising, that they say apparently since the $400 Xbox One launched in June, the company has apparently seen increased demand, that's a direct quote there, for the $500 Xbox One bundle that comes with Kinect. Almost like artificially driving up demand by making the Kinect bundle actually look like a really good deal in comparison to just the standalone two items. So, good on them for making some more money, I guess.
Yes, good on them for just filling their coffers even more. But we have some news if you're looking to fill out your calendar of events for the month of September. As you might know, this weekend is PAX Prime, the event taking place in Seattle, Washington at the Seattle Convention Center. But if you're looking beyond this weekend and looking into perhaps towards the end of September and looking, maybe you've got some free time, some holidays, and you're wondering, what can I do with that? And you want to attend another game convention, perhaps one of a smaller scale, because PAX Prime is bloody huge.
Yes, it is.
And if you don't enjoy giant throngs of sweaty, smelly people being in a shared space, then perhaps you want to get down to the Embassy Suites of Baltimore on September 27th and September 28th to enjoy the first ever Firaxicon.
Indeed.
Firaxicon being the first ever game event convention put on by Firaxis Games, the yes. developers of Civilization.
Guaranteed to not have as many people as PAX Prime, even by a factor of, let's say, 100.
That's a fair factor. I'm going with it.
I mean, PAX Prime has a ton of people. Just putting that out there. In case you've never been to PAX, it's a sea of people. In that whole, like, 10-block area of Seattle, a sea of people.
It's hard to get away from it.
Yes, it's very hard to get away from it. But
it's just a buttload of people descending on downtown Seattle for one weekend.
Yes.
You can't swing a cat without hitting people who are attending PAX Prime.
Indeed.
But this, you'll have an easier time and perhaps a more enjoyable time, because it'll be a smaller, more intimate affair. If you enjoy the games put out by Firaxis, then perfect. That's for you. Tickets for the event are available. They're going for $40. You can find the link to tickets on our website, thearcadeshow.com. And the developer has said that they are going to be, quote, strictly limited. We don't have exact numbers of how many they're limiting these tickets to, but I guess it's best to buy sooner rather than later. And if you're going to this convention, you can look forward to getting to meet and greet some of the members of the Firaxis Games teams. There's also going to be a special Evening with Sid Meier presentation that's going to be held, and you'll be able to play some work from the and some bits of the upcoming new Civ game, Civilization Beyond Earth, as well as get a tour of the Firaxis Games office so you can see where people put their coffee and see who has a sitting desk and who has a standing desk.
Or who has a convertible desk.
Ooh. Those are for the fancy people in the corner office.
I used to have one of those. I miss it, truthfully. It was awesome.
The special two-day event will also include, quote, hours of panels and presentations focused on Firaxis Games.
And, of course, unique Firaxicon swag.
Yes, there's that. And even you'll be able to, apparently, play board games against and with your favorite Firaxis game designers.
Not Sid Meier, though. I'm sure he...
Well, he's got a security detail around him.
Probably. And he only plays Settlers of Catan for one sitting, and he calls you names the whole time. Racist names, I bet.
Oh, my. That is a...
I'm just painting a terrible picture of Sid Meier in my head. That's... I'm sorry, you don't have to accept this picture of Sid Meier.
This is just your own perception that you're putting out there.
This is my own perception that I'm making up as I go along, but...
Excellent. Okay. Now, the $40 Firaxicon ticket will get you into the event. We'll also get you dinners and drinks, or dinner, singular dinner.
You're not eating. Get you dinner and drink.
No, dinner and drinks. So, one dinner and multiple drinks during the Firaxis feast.
I'm sure there's probably a limit on how many drinks.
Probably two, just enough to meet the, you know, plural of that word. You'll also get Firaxicon swag, which I'm sure... One of the things is going to be a lanyard, because these events always have lanyards.
Yes, yes, they do.
You'll need to buy tickets in advance. They will not be sold at the door, and if you're under 18, you will need to be accompanied by an adult. And if you're looking at staying at the Embassy Suites Baltimore itself, rooms available going for about $120 per night. So that's just special event pricing. For the hotel, through the event.
If you don't go through the event, I'm sure it'll be a lot more than that.
Certainly.
So if you're doing that, go through there, or look for a cheaper hotel somewhere in the surrounding area.
Exactly. We don't know what there is available in the Embassy Suites Baltimore area, what's around there, because we've never been.
No. Though, I'm sure something must exist. Just do a little search.
Exactly. Motel 6. Airbnb, I'm sure you could even check out, but of course.
Well, those other bigger hotels in the downtown area, I mean, they're usually all kind of in the same area.
Clustered together.
One of them might even have an elephant and castle in the basement. So
fingers crossed, indeed. So there's that to look forward to. But a bit of bad news here. If you were looking forward to...
Minecon.
Yeah, Minecon, the big Minecraft convention that's been happening annually for the past... 3-4 years, no dice. Not happening this year.
Yeah, not this year. It'll be back in 2015 in London, apparently, but not this year.
No. According to Mojang Chief Operating Officer Vu Bu, they explained that the company's plans laid them out in a post on the official company website. He said, quote, or they said, quote, while we'd love to do Minecon every year, and it's the only event we do as a company, we want to make sure we can give it the best attention it needs. And that means that springtime next year will work best. Adding that more information will be available soon as Mojang confirms the venue and eventually signs a contract to secure the venue. You know, putting up damage deposits and whatnot.
Yes. For reference sake, Minecon 2013 was in Florida. They sold 7,500 tickets for $150 each. So in 2015, who knows how many tickets they'll sell, but it'll be in London. So if you were planning on going to Minecon, hey, you might get a cool European trip out of it as well. So
indeed, you could make a whole event out of it. So there's
a whole event other than this event.
Indeed.
A whole two events out of it.
You can work these 2 days, into some greater travel plans. This is the first time that Minecon is missing a year since the convention was first held in 2010. Again, a bit of reference. They're looking at next year in London. Last year's Minecon was held at the Orange County Convention Center in Orlando, Florida. So they're hitting big cities with this.
Yes, indeed, hitting big cities.
So if next year's London, where after that? New York? Or Zurich?
Or are they going to just do it as a... every 2 years from this point forward? Kind of like the Olympics, winter? Or are they going to do it every 4 years like the Olympics? Or are they going to have a summer Minecon and then a winter Minecon?
Ooh.
No, I'm clearly spitballing stupid ideas. And when I start spitballing stupid ideas, that means that the show is probably drawing to near a close. Because I say near a close, I can't say just a close yet, because we still need to get to the blast from the past, which is something that we like to talk about at the end of every week. That is something to check out, try, experience in some matter that is from the past.
Perhaps even reacquaint yourself with.
Yes.
Something that you might have enjoyed previously, but, put it on your shelf.
Or in this case, totally forgot about. In my case, thankfully Mike the Legend brought it up. It is 10 years old now. It's a movie that came out...
In North America.
In North America on August 27. I think it might actually be 12 years old in China. But
Indeed. There were some issues with bringing it over and releasing it in North America, and that's a whole story.
But we don't need to get into that story. All I know is that in North America, I saw this movie, I think we both saw this movie actually, 10 years ago.
Indeed. Its release was August 27th of 2004. We're speaking of the very artistic, wonderfully shot, Jet Li action movie, Hero.
Yes. Since I don't remember a lot about the movie, other than it was just a cool sword fighty action movie, I'll let Mike the Legend do most of the talking this time. But this is essentially me, after reacquainting myself with a couple of clips, just going, wow, I need to watch this movie again. It had some really cool shots.
Some really just are very, very artistically done fight sequences.
Yes.
This is a more high-class martial arts movie.
Yes.
It is very artistic, very cinematic in its screen presentation. It tells the story of Jet Li, who plays the nameless hero, or Nameless.
Yep.
Who wants to kill the king of a particular region of China. This is before you get into the emperors of China, I believe. And along the way, he has to go through different assassins, like high-level elite assassins or guards, to eventually get to the king. There's three of them. And I believe when the movie starts, and a good portion of the movie, as I'm recalling, is made up of Jet Li telling his story of his journey to the king at the foot of the king's throne.
Hmm.
He gets there, and... Well, again, a large part of it is just telling his story, his encounters with these three individuals who were guards, assassins, what have you. See, forgive me if I'm not using the proper phrasing or terminology, but I'm just going off memory here because it's been, again, like you, just quite a while since I have seen it. The fight scenes are beautifully done, and they're also, strangely, and I recall this having this impression at the time when seeing it in the theater 10 years ago, is that the fight scenes were color-coded.
Yes.
The fight scenes with the different assassins or whatnot, they were all color-coded to a specific color of whatever individual. And the assassins, or combatants he has to fight, all have names like Sky and Moon and whatnot, and then have colors to also then better represent their names, so to speak. And I'm sure something else, deeper than that as well, but... I didn't look for deeper understanding and representations.
Yes, much like myself, I just remember it had some very good just shots, some really good choreography, maybe a little bit of wires here and there, but that's sort of to be forgiven. I mean, given the caliber of the action that they were trying to portray, it was really something else.
It certainly was, and one of the unique aspects I found is that the swordplay in the movie... What made it unique is that Jet Li would use a slotted sword.
Yes.
So as opposed to, when we think of martial arts movies, we think of people using a katana or something, some sort of solid long blade. He doesn't. He has a slot towards the end of his sword.
Yes. So if he's fighting against someone else with a sword and they come straight at him, he can catch the sword in the slot and flip it around and make them... not have their sword anymore.
And perhaps grab their sword and have two weapons in his hands. It's a very unique aspect, or very unique weapon, excuse me, and I haven't seen and cannot recall seeing too many other martial arts movies that use a particular slotted sword. And there's a lot of different things you can do to it. And when this movie was brought over, I recall it being done with, or sold... in the trailers as, Quentin Tarantino presents, and given a Quentin Tarantino stamp of approval.
Yeah.
And that apparently was part of a deal that was struck with, I think, Miramax, who held the U.S. distribution rights to bring it over, in order to actually convince them to finally bring it over. He'd been able to see the movie in China or get copies through ways and means. He's Quentin Tarantino. He can see whatever the hell he wants.
Yes, and he is a movie nut.
And he loved it. He loved the cinematography. He loved the story. He loved the acting. He loved everything about this movie and offered up to Miramax, I believe, for them to use his name in the promotion. That's how devoted to this movie he was, in order to allow North American audiences to see it, which is tremendous. I think that says a lot.
Yeah, semi-unprecedented, I think, at that point.
Certainly, because I don't think Quentin Tarantino was probably getting paid much, if anything, for that ringing endorsement.
No, probably not.
To get people to theaters. It is well worth watching, and also, too, there's another iconic scene. There's many, but to me, another iconic one is the tragic end of the nameless hero, Jet Li, in the movie.
We don't really need to spoil it.
Well, he faces a wall of archers, and
it's a memorable scene, but I think it's
sad and beautiful.
Yes.
In the imagery that it presents, it is, I'm sure you've forgotten all about it, because we had practically forgotten all about it. It's well worth going back and rewatching. It's enjoyable. I mean, you'll need something to watch on this Labor Day weekend. Perhaps if you're in a location wherever you are that's got inclement weather, you can't go outside, and you can't really enjoy yourself the way you want to, stay inside, get reacquainted, or watch for the first time Hero, starring Jet Li, from August 27th, 2004. Again, a high-class, high-end, very artistic martial arts movie.
Indeed.
That does it right. A perfect balance between art and martial arts, and awesome fight scenes. Well worth it. I expect a full report on our desk / email inbox in time for next week. Because it's a long weekend, we'll give you till Wednesday? Is Wednesday fair? Thursday?
Yeah, sure, Wednesday, Thursday.
You have till Wednesday or Thursday to get that report into us by emailing us, info@thearcadeshow.com. Tell us what you thought of Hero, and anything else you heard here on the program this week, or you can also use the Contact Us form on our website, thearcadeshow.com, or send us a tweet. We are at The Arcade Show, and also on Facebook, facebook.com/TheArcadeShow. So that about wraps us up for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us, and we hope you tune in again next week as we bring you our first show from the month of September. The months, the weeks, the days, they are counting down. But until then, everybody, good night.
Good night.